Well, today I have Leslie Schneider on the phone with me. She's a technical editor and a writer. We happened to meet at a writing workshop a few years back, and she's been helping me with my editing ever since. And I thought it would be interesting for Leslie to talk to us today about things you can do once you've got sort of your very rough draft, once you've got some information on paper or a piece of your story or a scene on paper, what you can do to make your own editing, do a little bit of your own editing to make the work flow a little better. So, hi, Leslie. How are you today?
Hey, Jan. Doing just fine.
Good. So, I know as a technical editor and as somebody who writes short stories, you probably have some tricks up your sleeve that you use to make the editing process a little simpler, and I was wondering if you could share one or two of those with us today.
Sure. Why don't we talk about flow first? When you're reading something you've written, there are certain things you need to keep in mind. The first thing is, what are you assuming the person who's reading what you wrote knows already? For example, if you're writing something fictional and you're talking about character. Have you introduced this character before? You may know all about this character, or as if it's a memoir, you may know all about this person in your life, but the person reading it might not know. So when you read something you've just written about a person in your life, you want to think, do they already know this person is 65, 7 feet tall, smells of garlic, whatever it is that you think is important that they know about this person to help this person become alive in the mind of the reader.
Yeah, that's a good tip. I know a lot of times when I was writing my memoir, I had a picture in my mind of what my grandfather looked like, for example. And the first edit, first time running through, I thought exactly the same thing. No one knows anything about him, if he's tall or thin or what his laugh is like or, you know, that he smells like vermouth. You know, things like that, that really I had to go back and fill in after my first draft. So that's a really good point. What else about flow?
Well, the other thing is how much of a description do they need to place them in the setting that you're trying to describe? For example, let's say something traumatic happened to you in a kitchen. And while the traumatic event was happening, you focused on the set of sharp knives on the counter, you noticed that they were Henkels and that Henkels hadn't been around in a long time because they'd lost favor in the knife world. And you were thinking about all these things about that set of knives on the kitchen counter while something traumatic was happening to you. Or you were thinking about the last time you had cleaned the counters, and the counters were porcelain tile, which meant that things got stuck to them and you had to work extra hard. These would be the kind of things that might be going through your mind about the kitchen where some traumatic event took place, rather than just saying, I was mugged in my kitchen.
It sounds like what you're saying is that a lot of times a beginning draft really won't have all the details in it that a reader would need to sort of have a sense of place and setting. And kind of details that might lead us to really get the picture.
You want to take what you've written and turn it into something 3D so they can smell the story, feel the story, really know the story on as many sensory levels as possible. You don't want to leave the reader asking too many questions about what's going on. Some questions are good because that might lead them to want to keep reading, so that's always a good thing. But if there are too many questions, it bogs the reader down and they lose interest.
I see. You know, one tip that I was given several years ago was to keep a list of all the senses right next to me when I wrote so that I remembered to use them. And that's something that might help people when they're talking about putting things in a logical order and adding the right details, don't you think?
Yeah, that's an excellent point, yeah. It's always worth to have a list of things you can check off and say, does this paragraph do this, this, and this, or does this scene do this, this, and this? That's excellent.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, you know, one of my issues is comma usage, and I can read the rules. I've read the rules. And at one point, I was in a writing workshop, and a comment was made that my comma usage was atrocious. Now, since then, I think I pay a little more attention, but commas often trip me up, and I wonder if you have any suggestions for people like me who just have read the rules but don't seem to be able to apply them.
Well, there's a couple of things you can keep in mind about comma usage. One use of commas is creating these phrases called appositives, which is a grammatical term, and we don't have to know what that really means. But what I look at it is what part of the sentence can you throw away and the sentence still makes sense? I call it kind of garbage or extra. For example, you could say, I woke up this morning and the sky was blue, and for Chicago, that's kind of odd, but I enjoyed the blue because it was so different. So you could say, the part that said, and that's kind of odd for Chicago, that wasn't necessary for the sentence to have a beginning and an end. It was kind of this extra stuff that, again, brings the reader more closer to the 3D part of your description. You could just say, I woke up this morning and the sky was blue, and you have a perfectly nice sentence. But if you want to make it fuller, you say, I woke up this morning and for Chicago, the sky was blue. You know, normally Chicago is gray because it has a lot of pollution, and you can bring a lot of assumptions just by that use of adding for Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one way you use commas. So you want to look at your sentences and go, do I have the commas surrounding those little extras that aren't really necessary to make a complete sentence? The other thing that commas are used for is for breathing. And you can learn this by reading what you wrote out loud. And so if you read a particular sentence and you find yourself needing to take a breath before you're done reading the entire sentence, your sentence is going on too long without a pause to take that breath. For example, you could have a very long sentence that says, I went for a walk with the dog and it was very noisy because there were so many other people with their dogs and I just barely could hold on to the dog. Ah, boy, that's a long sentence. So in order to break that up, you would say, I took a walk with my dog, comma. It was kind of noisy because of all the people, comma. But I continued on and I was enjoying the smell, blah, 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 blah. So you can see that as you read it out loud, you just want to notice, can I read this whole sentence and still on the same breath? And don't try to rush it and don't try to, you know, force yourself. Make it be a nice, easy, relaxed reading out loud and work with your breath that way. And whenever you feel like you are running out of breath, back up and say, well, where can I put a comma so that I don't, that doesn't happen to me? Commas are also used for a collection of thoughts, like a bullet list without the bullets. So you could say, it was warm, comma, it was sunny, comma, and it was about to rain, or something like that. But it's a series of thoughts. So actually, that's three ways you can use commas. The garbage piece, that's kind of there, but it's not essential to having a complete sentence. The breathing part, can I read this whole thing without passing out? And a collection of thoughts.
Those are really good tips, especially when you're not accustomed to writing. So putting things in a logical sequence and creating flow, and then using your breath to figure out where commas need to go and following some other really basic rules. So often, new writers feel so overwhelmed and feel like they can't write. And in my workshops, you know, I always tell people, there are professionals, you know, there are editors who really, if you get to a point where you want to publish or you really are going to distribute what you've written to more than just your best friend, at that point you probably do want to hire an editor. And how do people know when they have a manuscript that's in good enough shape to even send to an editor? Do you have any suggestions for that? Like, when would somebody use an editor's services?
I'm assuming people want to keep the costs down. So if you have friends that will speak to you again after reading your stuff, have as many people as possible read it first who aren't editors, because they will be really good at giving you feedback on flow, because they'll tell you, gee, I don't know about this character. Seems to come out of nowhere, or I wish I knew if this character was tall or thin or had red hair. So you can get a lot of feedback just from your friends if they're willing to read the stuff for you. But editors are good for your, you know, really strict grammatical rules, because, you know, not only your friends are going to know that, so you could use an editor for that. And then, of course, the editor will also clean up the flow and scene descriptions and things like that. But I would say have as many people as you can read it first so that it's as cleaned up as possible until you need to pay somebody to do it.
And is there a big difference between structural editing and technical editing?
Oh, I would call that developmental editing.
Okay.
There's copy editing and there's developmental editing. Copy editing is basically you need a comma here, you left out a word there, fix up the grammar. Developmental editing is your flow, your descriptions, is everything where it should be. Developmental editing is usually done first, and copy editing is done last, because anytime you make any change to any file, you are introducing the possibility for a typo, and that's what copy editing is for. So developmental editing is good to do as early as possible and as often as possible to really tighten everything up, and then copy editing is what you do last.
Great. Well, any other final words that you have for people who are new to writing and editing?
Don't be afraid to put your thoughts on paper. You're more interesting than you know.
Okay, I like that. That's pretty motivational. Well, Leslie, thank you so much for taking the time today to talk to all of us. And I'll upload the interview, and you'll be able to listen to it, too. You can go to janfischler.com.
Thank you.
Thanks again.
Much.